Why do we seem to be fascinated with the dead? Ghost stories. We are, you know. In a moment, Chris Fleming, one of the hosts of the television series Dead Famous, he'll be sharing some stories of ghost investigation he's done, including the search for the ghosts of Alfred Hitchcock, Marilyn Monroe, James Dean, and many, many more. From an early age in Chicago, Chris Fleming was prone to extraordinary measures of seeing and sensing ghosts. These encounters eventually carried over into his dreams, often lending him precognitive advice and warnings. After years of hearing others talk about their extraordinary experiences, he chose to document these in his own publication called Unknown Magazine, Real Experiences of the Paranormal and the Supernatural, which is currently now out of print. In his spare time, Chris joins forces with local ghost hunters investigating haunted places. While his abilities continue to develop today, he has recently put them to use on the television series called Dead Famous, a reality and documentary-type program where he and his co-presenter, Gail Porter, investigate ghostly phenomena surrounding famous celebrities and historical haunted sites. And you can see this on Biography. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good morning and good evening, George. How are you?
Good. You know, I was watching some of your shows, and they're pretty scary, Chris. The one where you and Gail were down in that tunnel was, I was getting claustrophobic just watching you two.
The tunnel that we were at, that was during the Alfred Hitchcock episode, it was kind of comical in a sense, too, because Gail is very claustrophobic. And I kind of knew that when we went down there. And, of course, we were looking for the spirit of Alfred Hitchcock, but also there's allegedly some ghosts that haunt that hotel, the York Hotel that we were at. And I kind of teased her a little bit while she was down there and kind of made her a little bit more claustrophobic.
Yeah, you kind of edge her on a little bit.
You have to have your fun sometimes.
Even before we get into the program that you're hosting now, Dead Famous, and some of the things that you've investigated, let's talk a little bit about you, because this extraordinary ability that you have happened at a very young age. But how did it come to be?
Well, that's an easy question, because people say, well, when did it start? The first thing that always pops into my mind was I remember when late at night I would get into bed, I'd get up, go to the bathroom, or I'd wake up and look around the room feeling that something's there, and I would feel a tap on the shoulder, and I would turn around, and no one would be there. And I used to get so scared that if I'd be facing the wall, that whatever it was would come up and tap me on the shoulder again. So I used to always sleep with my back to the wall. At first, of course, I thought it was my parents coming in playing jokes,
sure.
But things began to escalate. And when I say escalate, they got stronger. I started seeing apparitions that would actually come in and out of the room, and there's many different types that I would see. I would also have collective experiences where this was the most amazing part. I would have friends that would sleep over in second or third grade, and they would see things with me. And it wasn't just that. My mom experienced stuff also. But most of the stuff used to happen when I was sleeping in my father's room, because I used to get so scared sleeping by myself. You know, while my mom was traveling, working on airlines, I would stay in my dad's room. And I would stay in there with him.
Yeah.
And I tell you, George, it got fascinating because I was never afraid when he was there. I mean, he played professional hockey. He played 13 years in the NHL. So here's one of the toughest hockey players Reggie Fleming ever played. Of course, at that young age, I really didn't know that much. But laying next to him and seeing these things come in and out of the room, I knew that if they ever turned on me, you know, my dad was there to protect me. So I guess at a young age, I started realizing my potential abilities that I had. Of course, at such a young age, you don't know why it's happening to you. You begin to think it's just natural in some instances. But watching these things come in and out of the room, a lot of them would just float. They wouldn't walk like people do. They would kind of glide across the room slowly, some of them moving very stiffly, dark, full-form shadows, as well as figures that would even cast shadows or would show reflections when they would pass the mirror. I had one instance where one floated into the room, it went by the window, which was casting out the, or casting in the moonlight, and it would slowly disappear as it passed the mirror, or the window, and you would see it start to appear from the mirror, and you would turn over there, and you don't see it, but you see it in the mirror, and as it got closer to the mirror and away from the light, it started to become solid. And the interesting thing was it recognized its own reflection.
That's
it stopped, turned, leaned forward, and looked at its reflection in the mirror. Now, to me, at the time, I thought someone was in the room. You know, I said, Dad, there's somebody in the room. They're looking at themselves in the mirror. And my dad says, just ignore them, and they'll go away.
Did your dad ever see any of these entities?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, he never talked about it because my mom had told me one time, he pulled her aside and said, you know, these things that Chris is seeing is talking about, you know, I see them too, but I don't know what to tell him. But there's a couple situations that occurred that I recognized that he did know this was going on. One particular incident was it got really quiet. These things tended to disappear. And I was like, okay, well, what's going on? It's pretty quiet. Maybe they're done for the night. All of a sudden, something appeared on the side of the bed. It lasted for probably about 5 seconds. It lit up the entire room. It was horrific. Some type of creature, you know, at the time I thought it was probably a demon or something, and with flames and everything. It was pointing right at me, and it screamed something. The scream was so loud that my dad was on the other side of the bed, jumped off the bed, cursing, swearing, fell and hit the floor. I go scrambling for him on the bed, slide off the bed on top of him. He grabs me, throws me down on the floor, and gets on top of me to protect me. Now, he's shaking. He jumps up, turns on the light, and he goes, you know, what the blank was that? And I'm like, telling him, Dad, I was raised a Catholic, so right away I'm assuming it's the devil or the demon or something. And he was so shaken that he basically pressed me against the bed in the wall and sat there, didn't know what to do, got on the phone, put the phone back down, you know, looked around the room and just, until we got so tired from sitting up with the light on that we eventually went back to bed. So for something like that to occur where it really shook my dad up, now he didn't see it, he heard it. It was amazing. I realized that, you know, I am seeing these things.
Was it you, Chris, or was it the house? What was doing it?
Well, at the time, you know, I thought it was the house. I thought it was a haunted house. And, you know, and other people would come over and they would see things. But as time went on, I would talk to some of the neighborhood kids, and they would have things happening in their house too. Maybe not as severe as what was happening in my house, but when I went away to college, I still had a few things happen. You know, and when we moved out of that house, I still had things happen. Not as much as when I was in that age from, I'd say, 5 to about 10. You know, the most stuff happened between 5 and 7 years old where it was happening, which I feel almost nightly, but time is pretty much compacted when you're younger.
Sure.
You know, when you get old and you look back on it, so it seems like it was every night, but it was pretty periodically.
Well, did they get stronger or weaker, these events, as you got older?
Well, some of them, I would say it got to a point when I got older, I couldn't see them like I used to. And I think part of it was a sense of fear because it got so traumatic where I would have doors open and close. Things would come out of the closet, these dark forms that were like tornado-like that would move across the room and come after me. And I was afraid that, if they pulled me into it, I was going to be gone. You know, I was going into the darkness. So I was so scared that one time when my parents were gone and my sister and I were home alone, the phone started ringing, and there was static on the phone. And we heard noises and moans coming from downstairs, and then I saw this dark form coming down the stairs. I flipped. I basically grabbed a cross. My sister was behind me crying and screaming. I walked around the room, and I just, like, for a little kid, I banished them. For some reason, I just said, be gone. And I started calling upon the angels and all that stuff. And things didn't happen for a long time. I didn't see them anymore. We didn't have the traumatic experiences, but there were still some things that began to occur when I got into like 7th and 8th grade. There were doors opening and closing. You'd hear voices. And these things occurred when my mom was around, too. She would hear these things with me. But I would not see full-blown apparitions like I used to until I was probably in my 20s.
Did the word get around the neighborhoods that, this kid is, seeing ghosts?
Well, the difficult thing, George, you know, to all your viewers, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that can relate to this, is at first, I'm like, you know, I see ghosts. I go to school and I tell kids, you know, I saw a ghost last night, you know, da da da. Some kids would tease you. You know, a lot of kids actually tease me. And then some kids would believe me. It was always the girls that believed me.
The macho guys didn't, unless they were in that house with you.
Exactly.
And then they probably fell apart.
Well, I'll tell you, one kid slept over. His name was Bud. And he never slept over again because this one blue-green ghost appeared above him. He was so terrified. His parents wouldn't even let me talk to him for a while. And he said basically sleeping over at Chris's house was for the birds. He says, I'll never sleep over there again. Now, some of my best friends at the time, they witnessed stuff. And they would wake me up because we'd sleep downstairs. And we had this big hill in the backyard. And one night, they both woke me up. There was a ghost that was coming down the hill, kind of like in a wedding dress, and just came right towards the window. And as she got towards the window, she just disappeared. And I saw it right when it was coming towards the window. And they said they watched it come all the way down the hill. So the nice thing, George, was I had the collective experiences. I had other people that witnessed it, so it's not something psychological. It's not something that I was just making up. There was other people there that could support me on it.
Were these entities in your youth, were they all what we would consider to be friendly ghosts, friendly entities, or were some of them true demons out to really get you?
There was, I would say, both sides of the coin. It's just weird because thinking about this, I'm not getting emotional. It's just starting to think of some of the things that occurred. It's kind of making me shake because some of the stuff that really terrified me.
Well, and you do get, just by watching the shows, you do get pretty emotional on those programs.
Well, I want to go right into that real quick, and then I'll go back to what I was
saying.
Is, yes, I do. And the one thing you don't hear about on the program, and you don't see it unless you know me, is one of the things that really I jumped on for doing this show was I look back in my life, and I realize, okay, there's a lot of things that happened. I can explain a lot of them dealing with the paranormal because I believe no one can tell me otherwise because I know I've had the experience.
You've been there.
But there's still that why me? Okay, can I see them again like I used to? What did they want from me? Now to be in a show where I get to go to the most haunted places in America and I'm put right back into the frying pan, I'm actually, in a way, confronting my childhood fears. I'm actually confronting those things that happened to me when I was a kid to where now I'm an adult. I should understand it a lot more because I'm older, but now I have to understand it, and I have to face it face to face. And at times, people that know me can notice that on the show. They're like, oh, my God, you know, look at him. But people that don't know me, they don't understand.
See, and I'm not so sure if the areas that you visit are merely haunted or if you bring it out of the area. You know what I mean? By you being there, maybe you pull this ghost or this entity out from a region that might not have been there. Now, yes, you've had reports mm-hmm. in some of the spots you've been of hauntings and this and that.
Right.
But I'm just wondering if you're like a lightning rod.
Well, I'm going to say both, and I'm not saying that in any egotistical way. I'm saying it based on evidence that we've collected. Just about every location, I want to say 98, 99% of places we go to, things happen. I mean, things happen. People that watch your show are like, oh, it's impossible. I can't believe things happen everywhere they go. But I'm sorry. You know, take it or leave it. It does happen.
Well, and people need to also understand is, though it may look like it's happening in that hour of the program, I mean, you're shooting a lot of videotape. You're editing it.
Well, they're anywhere from 3 to 6 hours.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it just doesn't happen like that.
Right, and you're seeing 2 minutes. It's compacted to make it scary and to
right.
make it intense.
Exactly.
But the thing is that, you know, these locations I go to, I love to do EVP sweeps. And the one thing people need to understand is I haven't just jumped on the bandwagon for EVPs. I'm 38 years old. The first EVP I ever got, I was 7 years old. And I had an old reel-to-reel player.
I remember those.
I saw some show that was on in the early 70s. And it was these people that went to a graveyard and started getting stuff on reel-to-reel. I watched it with my mom. And there was also some ghost, scary poltergeist that was in a basement scaring this family. It was true stories, and it was on TV, and we watched it. And I said, oh, my God, this is like what happens to us. I said, I got to get a reel-to-reel. So my dad got me a reel-to-reel, and I was sitting down doing a Ouija board by myself.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah.
I used to do it all the time, and, you know, those are stories just in itself. But I caught a voice, and I said, you know, speak to me. You know, say something. And the voice said on the reel-to-reel, touch is me. It was like a whisper, but it was very loud.
Mm-hmm.
And it freaked me out at first. I mean, I was terrified. I'm like, oh, my God, I got something on tape. And it was the only thing I really got at that young age, but I'll never forget it because it was the first EVP I ever got, and it was called Touches Me.
Do you sometimes think, and we'll get back to the demon question when you're a kid, but do you sometimes think these EVPs are a form of communication? They need to tell some human what's going on? Or do you just think the technology just happens to pick up sounds that are always out there, and we just can't hear them with our own ears?
Well, I think it's both. The thing is I've collected over thousands of EVPs. And in all the locations we go during the show, we'll go to 3 to 4 locations per celebrity that we do. I get anywhere from a minimum of 10 EVPs to 70 or 80 EVPs each location, and they range from A to C grade. During this, I have asked them questions, about, who are you, why are you here? And it can go in two different ways. Some of them are actual ghosts that are there, okay? Some of them are spirits that are really far away, that really don't even haunt that place, that talk to me somehow, whether they're spirit guides, whether they're other spirits, that they hear what I have to say, and since no one is responding to it, they respond from such a distance.
And you just seem to pull them in.
It's amazing because, I can go into so many different things here, but I pick up what's called place memory.
And what's that?
The place memory is, and this was actually termed from Pamela Heath I had worked with during the Alcatraz episode, and God bless her. If she was not there with me, I personally probably would have been a mental basket case. I walked into Alcatraz, and there are things, events, traumas, deaths, occurrences, emotions that living people release when those things happen.
Yeah.
They are recorded by inanimate objects, buildings, tables, you name it. And that is recorded. It is energy. It is recorded. People, many people, including myself, can go in there and they could read it. They can pick it up. They can absorb that energy. And everybody's different that does this, psychics, mediums, sensitives, whatever. I consider myself a sensitive. I'm sensitive to that place memory.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, I see, and I become a part of whatever happened to that person that was there. Some people can just see it in their head and they can play it and they'll tell you what happened. Me, I admit, I get dramatic. I actually feel as if I'm going through what that person went through, whether it's a stabbing, whether it's a choking, whether it's being completely heartbroken, whatever the case may be. I relive it. When I went to Alcatraz, that place is not a prison. It is an insane asylum. There were so many mentally messed up people there, and here I was experiencing the beatings, experiencing the surgeries, experiencing the deep evil thought patterns, the crying because this individual murdered not only a woman but a child, and he felt so bad about murdering the child. Pamela was there to pull me out of it and tell me, this is what you're feeling. You're an empath. Not only you're an empath to pick up the emotions, but you're picking up place memory. Now, I had never known. As soon as she said that, I realized all the other events that occurred in my life, they made sense. Why I would certainly suddenly get emotional, my parents couldn't figure out why.
Do you get physically drained with episodes like this?
When we left Alcatraz, like I said, if Pam was not there to pull me out of this, now she's a parapsychologist, she's written some incredible books on this stuff, and I admire any advice she gives me because she studied this stuff. She's pulled me out of it, and because of that, I wasn't able to get stuck and get completely absorbed and completely drained. But when I left, when we left 6, 7 in the morning, from being there all night filming, I was exhausted.
Wiped out.
I could have slept for 2-3 days.
Stay with us, Chris. We'll be back. We'll continue the dialogue. I want to find out, too, about those demons and the good ghosts, what happened to you when you were younger, and then we'll get into the sensitive. And it could very well be hereditary, too. If your mother picks this up, maybe you got this gift from her. We'll be back in a moment. Chris Fleming, he is the co-host of the television show Dead Famous on Biography Channel. We'll be back. Well, the time is coming near where we will not make available this free CD on Perfect Possession, Exorcisms, Father Malachi Martin. You get it with an After Dark subscription by renewing or brand new subscription. You call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505, or go online at coast2coasttocoastam.com. We'll be right back. And our guest is Chris Fleming. We'll talk next hour about the television show, of course, Dead Famous, some of the sites that they've been. Some of them have been pretty darn remarkable, I'll tell you. Chris, the good versus the bad. It has happened. Have you had those kinds of entities out there?
Yeah, you know, I was raised a Catholic, and while my belief system has changed tremendously, I would like to say I'm spiritual rather than religious. I do believe that the religions hold a certain factor for everybody, depending upon what they need in their life. But because of that, I was raised that there's angels, there's demons.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that I saw, I would consider it's a demon. Of course, the ghost, I never considered it was either or. I knew there were people that had passed away. So I would call upon angels to protect me or whatever it would be when I would see these things that I felt were evil or wanted to cause me harm. It's hard to tell exactly which was which. Were they low-level entities? Were they demons? Some of these things that I saw, it's hard to describe.
But they weren't friendly.
No, they weren't. And I felt that they had a purpose, and it was not something that I wanted to be a part of. I used to have dreams that would coincide with some of these things that I would see, and I would wake up with scratches on me. And I would wake up in sweats and stuff like that, as if that, you know, they wanted to take me away into the darkness, that type of stuff, near certain parts of the house. I was afraid because they would linger there. But when we talk about the good versus evil, there is not necessarily a fine line. There's a huge area that's a gray matter here. Because when I would sit in these rooms, I would be in my parents' room or my room, and I would look around the room, I began to identify different types of spirits and entities that I saw. The ones that would glow in the dark, blue and green aura, I would feel that they were kind of confused. They weren't evil. They were just kind of stuck there.
They had no idea where they were.
Yeah, they didn't know where they were. The dark, shadowy figures that would move into the darkness would always stay in the corners. They would eventually come out. Those were not good. Those, you know, I've seen in your programs years ago, you called them shadow people and this and that.
Right.
And I have to agree, yeah, I would call them shadow people, too. Some of them were cloaked. Some of them were just completely black darkness, very similar to what you see in that old movie called Ghost with, I think it was Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze, great
right.
Movie, by the way.
Man, they look like
that. And Demi
they look
Moore.
Like that.
Yeah.
And those I was afraid of. Those I felt that if I went into that darkness, I wouldn't see light again. They would sometimes come after me. I'd see them move around the room. And then there was the type that I call them like the poltergeist type, because they would be vaporous, like a blue-green aura, but it wasn't glowing. It was like smoke in the air, okay? It was like a mist. But they would move around stringy, and they would become amorphic, where they can change into whatever they wanted. They can change into like a stream bean-looking man. They can change into a full-blown torso or face to whatever they wanted to become. They were like shapeshifters, but they were ghosts. They would go in and out of the rooms, they would go in and out of the closets, and they would kind of play with each other. They would blend into each other, and then they would take off. They were very playful, and I remember one night, one was swooping down, and I was looking at it, and it stopped. It came back, and it looked at me, and it took the shape of a human face. And then it turned to the left and turned to the right, like it was so curious, the fact that I recognized
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, of course, I was scared, but in the same sense, I was really... I was concerned. I was like, wow, what is this? You know, it's looking at me. It recognizes that I see it. Then the other types were the ones that were dark solid, as if a person was standing right there. You could not see through them. And they would glide across the room as if they were on rollers. They would just glide across the room. And whatever they passed, you know, you would see them right in front of it. You know, you would see if there's a lamp behind it and it went past the lamp, you wouldn't see the lamp anymore. That was the same type that looked in the mirror, that identified itself in the mirror.
Did you ever think, Chris, that these entities could overtake you, maybe possess you?
Yes, yes, definitely. And I think if it was not for my belief in a higher power, my belief in angels, whatever you want to call it, at that time, definitely I would have been possessed. I would have had some major problems. And there's many instances I can go into, but one particular was my mom and I used to do the Ouija board. We used to try to talk to spirits, and normally we'd get okay spirits, but sometimes we'd get some really bad ones. Here's a kid in his pajamas sitting on a little cubed chair, his mom right across from him doing the Ouija board. all of a sudden things starts going crazy, back and forth, so fast you can't even keep up with it. And it starts doing the sign of the pentagram and all this other stuff and starts swearing. And all of a sudden, my pajamas start fluttering as if I'm caught in this hurricane. My hair is blowing as if I'm falling. I'm getting ice cold, and I start lifting off the cube. Now, I'm a good 6 inches off the cube right now while this is happening, and I'm panicking.
I mean, you couldn't get down?
No, I was floating in the air. I was becoming lighter and lighter as if I was picked up into a very cold storm, like a cold wind, and it was just lifting me up. And I started feeling colder and colder, and I started feeling this tingling all over my body as if something was starting to enter me. And I go, Mom, it's trying to possess me, it's trying to possess me. And my mom opened up her eyes and closed them. She was very calm. And she says, just start praying. And she started saying, Our Father, Hail Mary, and we started going through that whole thing. And as I started saying that, I started slowly coming back down, and whoosh, it went right through me. The room temperature changed. It got very warm, and all of a sudden the board started moving real slowly, then started picking up some steam, but moving very cautiously. And it said, Are you okay? And then it said that it was a spirit that had, I guess it died in A.D., like 50 or 60 A.D.
Did you ever question your own sanity?
Of course I did. Of course I did.
I mean, did you attempt to get counseling, help?
Well, here's the thing. I used to talk to my dad would say, you know, it's just your imagination, or just ignore it. It would go away. He was conflicting with what he would say. My mom was like, I believe you, just don't talk about it, don't tell anybody, you know. My friends would talk about it, that I'd had the experiences, but it wasn't good enough for me, because I was still learning, who am I, what am I, you know, as a child. That I used to talk to my dad, I used to talk to the priests also when I was in church. We'd have confession, and I would start telling him, you know, can I talk to you? And he says, yeah. I go, know about things I don't tell other people. And I start telling him, and he's like, do you mind sitting face to face? I said, no. So I'd come around, the people come around into the other room, and I'd sit down face-to-face, and I'd tell him these stories. And he would tell me, keep praying, you know, everything's going to be okay, you know, stop playing with the Ouija board, you know, stop doing this.
Yeah.
So I'd have him bless, you know, holy water, and I'd sprinkle it around the house, and I'd bless the cross.
Did that work?
No. No, it didn't work, because, you know what, I think that there was still skepticism in his mind, because he didn't believe that these things were happening. Yeah, even though he had faith and everything, I don't think he had heard stories like this or really talked to somebody like this. So I think it was testing his faith.
His faith, his power wasn't strong enough. The belief system wasn't
there. But when I got older, you know, I told my dad, you know, I would like to talk to some priest. There's a place called Maryville, which is an academy for boys and girls that didn't have any parents or runaways and stuff, that my dad was very involved with. And I knew some of the priests there, and they do a tremendous job. But I wanted to go talk to someone, because they did a lot of counseling, but I never got the guts to do it until I got older, and I decided, you know, there's other things I wanted to, issues I wanted to resolve, family issues that I wanted to talk to a psychologist. Went and saw a psychologist that my mom had found, and this guy had never dealt with any of this stuff, didn't even know about any of this stuff or know that I was going to talk about this. Well, I went to see him, talked about other issues, and I said, you know what? I go, do you do hypnosis or regression? He was like, yeah. And I said, well, I would like to go back to a couple experiences as a child that happened to me. I never told him what it was, never told him that these things happened yet. And he said, sure. And I said, there's one particular thing that happened on Easter, and, you know, this and that. So we went back to it. When he pulled me out of it, he was stuttering. He was shaking. He was, well, you know, he never did that the whole time we had sessions.
Did you go into some other character, or what
happened? Went back to when I was like 5 or 7 years old. I was describing the pajamas I had with tucks on them. I was describing the wallpaper, the sheets. I called my mom up afterwards, you know, when I was driving home. I go, Mom, did I have orange rustic sheets? She's like, oh my God, yeah. And did I have like baby duckling, you know, pajamas? I go, what were you thinking? You know? And she's like, oh my God, yeah, you did. And I'm just like, I never would have remembered that unless I had that, you know, regression. Well, he was freaked out. We tried to do a couple more sessions. We got a few things out, but then I started hitting a wall where I could not go back. He was not able to get me back. It's as if there was something that was not allowing me to go back there. I ended up going to some other psychologists and counselors that started to deal with this type of stuff.
Did they believe you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they did.
I asked him, I said, Doc, you know, you've known me for over a year now. Am I crazy? And he's like, no. He goes, you have had experiences, amazing experiences, and based on this regression, you've had collective experiences. He goes, because of that, I can't label it as anything psychologically wrong with you.
Well, did you need reassuring, Chris, or did you think there was something wrong with you?
Well, when you have these many things happen, it's not so much of needing reassurance. I wanted to go back and see some of the details. I wanted to witness it again. And I'll tell you what, you know, you forget a lot, because when I went back, there was more details that I forgot. And it was amazing.
And these episodes, of course, have become the focal point of your entire foundation. You know, putting together the magazine, for example.
Right.
It became your avocation.
Well, you know, I kept pulling away from it and getting involved in other things. And all it takes is someone sitting at a table when I'm working for a mortgage company late at night and start telling a ghost story. And then everybody else starts telling ghost stories. And I realize, oh, my God, you know, this is my whole life. I said, I've got to do something.
I can't get away from it. Yeah.
I published a magazine for 5 years, talked to people all over the world, and allowed them to tell their stories.
And what did you, there's a common denominator here that whatever's occurring is occurring worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
And in a massive form, isn't it?
It's not just me. I mean, you know, and it was nice to know that there was other people out there that had even more amazing experiences than I had. You know, but I had such a wide range of experiences, and it was like, why am I having all these different experiences? I think it's because maybe I believe that I've had many lives, that I've reached a spiritual path, and I've reached a point where I'm very close to, I guess, completing some of my lives or my missions, that there's a communication there, there's an understanding, and that I know, and I've always known there's so much more to this life. I've always known that. And I've had precognition, I've had dreams that come true, I've had, you know, all that stuff. I can go on and on.
Oh, yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's happening for a reason. I don't fully understand that reason. I have ideas, and I think there's so many other people in this world that are blessed and that are having things above and beyond what I'm having that are coming to terms with it for a reason. And I think we are all here for a specific reason, everybody, to become a part of it, whatever it may be.
How did this equate, how did this evolve into the television show, Dead Famous?
Well, it's funny because when I decided I couldn't do the magazine anymore because it was just so expensive, it was eating up my time,
mm-hmm.
and I was in a job that was 100% commission. I was spending more time doing the magazine. you can
yeah.
do the numbers.
When
there.
You're on 100% commission, you got to be out there working your
right.
tail off.
And I wasn't because I loved doing the magazine,
yeah.
not only, you know, being a graphic designer and designing it and laying it out, but doing the story.
So you're pumping your money into the magazine.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I ended up going bankrupt and because I just couldn't pay my bills because I was doing the magazine
mm-hmm.
so much. Every penny I had went into it. It got to a point where I said, you know, I can't do this. And I remember the girl I was going out with at the time, I said, it's okay, though. And she goes, well, you can always do it later. I said, no, I'm not going to do it later. I'm gonna do a TV show. I'm going to be a part of a TV show. I just know that. I feel it, that this is going to evolve into something else that I can reach more people. And sure enough, years later, I get a phone call from England, producer, and I actually didn't respond to it for like a month. I didn't believe it. And I got a call at work. She was on there, and she pitched it to me, says, we want you to be a part of this. I said, yeah, right. Well, they flew me out there a week later. We shot the pilot, and I said, here we go, and this is it. Now, the funny thing I have to tell you, George, is I'm evolving on the show, and when I say I'm evolving is I went in there doing the show saying, I'm a ghost hunter.
Right.
And I can sense ghosts. I can sense when they're around. Okay? Yeah, I've had a little bit of ESP and stuff, but I don't want people to know about that because I haven't fully learned how to control that. I can use all the equipment, do EVPs, that type of stuff, and I can sense when a ghost is around. That's it. Well, guess what? I'm thrown into these situations, these seances, these haunted places where all these other things start happening because I'm trying to open myself up to it, and I'm realizing I'm an empath. I can channel, I can do all these other things that I was never aware of at the time or able to label or identify growing up because I didn't have these professionals with me, such as parapsychologists or other psychics or mediums telling me that, oh my God, this is what you're doing.
Yeah, you're having other experts tap into your abilities and they're fine-tuning you now.
Definitely, they're training me. They're there for specific reasons. These people have come into my life on this show. It's not just a TV show, and that's what I'm trying to tell you. And of course, that's what you see. But behind the scenes is these people I'm there for a reason. My co-host is there for a reason. She's gone through some dramatic changes. Everybody in the crew.
She was a skeptic, wasn't she?
She's a skeptic. She is a hardcore
skeptic.
She's
the toughie.
And at times, you know, I'm going to come out and say this. At times, it's very hard for her to be a skeptic with all the things that occur. So every time we get out there and we do this, it's like, okay, let's do this, you know, and there's things that happen.
Why do you think, Chris, there's such a phenomenal interest in the not only the paranormal, of course, which mm-hmm. is what we all dabble in, but about the afterlife? People are obsessed with it. They can't get enough of it.
People are fed up with the things that are going on in this world. They are fed up with the negativity on the news. They are fed up with what other people are doing to other people, taking advantage of. We are going through a change of so much separation that we have not only we've been separated from the Creator, we've been separated from where we came from to come down here, but now we are separating ourselves from each other. Races are separating themselves again. Religions are separating themselves. Everybody wants to be a part of something else. And the problem is, you know, Deepak Chopra made this incredible analogy. And I listened to all these other people because they're all part of one whole. And he said that take an apple, slice it in a million pieces. You have that one millionth of a piece. What is it? It's still an apple. We still come from the same source. But when you spread it out farther and farther, you start noticing differences. And the farther you spread it out, the farther it's away from the whole. And that's what's happening on this planet, is people are separating themselves. But there are those that are tired of it. And they want to know, what is the purpose? Why are we here? There's got to be some reason, something better from them what's going on. And there is. There's, of course, the afterlife and trying to remember why we're here.
And what happens to us when the time comes.
Exactly.
Which is a pretty profound thing, I think, for a lot of people to comprehend.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is with the show we do, you know, Dead Famous, is it says just that. It's talking about celebrities that were famous that have died. They're dead. And we contact them. And a lot of people goes, oh, yeah, right. Like, you're going to get, let me tell you something. We all come from the same place. We all go to the same place. You learn how to tap into that place. You can talk to anybody. Do we get all these celebrities? No, we don't. We have gotten some. And trust me, even I have been shocked at some of the things that have happened.
Sometimes you get other ghosts in these
spots. We always get other ghosts.
They're everywhere.
They are everywhere. You know, I'd work with Barry Taff and stuff, and there's a documentary they did about California, the haunted people, ghosts and stuff. And, you know, one of the ghosts said that phantoms fill the skies. And I'm sorry, but they do. Ghosts are everywhere. You know, think about the millions and billions and trillions of people that have been on this planet. Not all of them cross over. A lot of them are still stuck here.
You sent us a pretty interesting picture that we posted up there on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And, it is kind of scary that when you go out on these scenes, this is the Moss Beach ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to pick up these things, I mean, you can see weird little things, weird entities. They're there.
The funny thing about that picture is not everybody sees it. I saw it right away. And I think it's because of my experiences and recognizing I'm able to identify it. And I'll tell you, those that can see this picture, they can see the face in there. That is what those things looked like when they took a form, those vaporous type. And when it would appear right in front of me, they would take that form. And they would have that blue-green type aura. And it's just, when I saw that, boom, I remembered right away from what I saw when I was a kid. And I'm like, that's it.
When we come back, let's talk about your search for the ghost of Marilyn Monroe, Alfred Hitchcock, Frank Sinatra, Jim Morrison, and many more. That'll be next with our guest, Chris Fleming, on Coast to Coast AM.